Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on national health care insurance right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights of great and small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures of great and small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, in Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? If you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach here in our Mosaic Law School. It's conducted twice a year here at the law school. And if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go directly to our webpage and download that free general law CD package right off of our webpage. All right, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. National health care insurance is now in the bag. The Congress has made a deal with some of the conservative Democrats that they were fighting with over the final enactment about it. We Americans have dodged the bullet on the socialized medicine program for about 50 years. Nearly all the countries of the world have socialized medicine. America is the last big industrialized nation to opt for the new program, the new socialized medicine program. We don't call it socialized medicine here in the United States. We call it national health care insurance. And that's because everybody in America accepts insurance. It's a given. It's necessary. Everybody has to have it. Everybody wants it. It's desirable. It's something that everybody can subscribe to. Now, there's a few of us that don't subscribe to insurance and insurance principles, but they're few and far between. So we hang labels here in America on things that describe what it is that we're not afraid of in order to sell us things that we are terrified of. And socialized medicine is something that Americans have been terrorized and fearful of, but not any longer. We have change in the air, change in the wind. And a fellow in Phoenix, Arizona, by the name of Peter Freckenstein, he's a blogger and former Marine from Phoenix, Arizona, has gone through the Obama health care package, the health care bill, page by page, and has highlighted the provisions that he has found there. Now, this is what congressmen and senators get paid to do. They're supposed to take these bills and take their staffs and run through them and analyze them for you and I. I mean, you know, we go out and we vote for Dianne Feinstein, and we expect Dianne to go back to Washington and represent our interests, don't we? We expect her to read this 1,000-page bill and then apply her best judgment to it on our behalf. And then she's supposed to vote on that based upon what she believes would be in the best interests of all the people that she represents. Whether she does that or not, that may be another story for another day, but that's what we're hiring these people to do. Now, with the Patriot Act and Homeland Security, those bills were presented to the House and Senate and passed before anybody had a chance to read it. And I thought, now that's kind of crazy. You're gonna enact a law, some rule, regulation, custom, usage, or practice, and you don't even know what it is. Somehow that doesn't make any sense to me, but then, you know, I'm not a politician. I'm just a crummy reporter, so I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. Now, in this case, the health care bill is actually being read. So every member of the House and Senate has this bill. Here's an ex-Marine in Phoenix, Arizona, who's reading it. That's more than I've done. I don't have a copy of the bill, and I haven't read it. But I was going just came from Spiker the other day, and I had Dirk download it and put it on my desk, and it's a four-page article here. If you go to Spiker, 8/1/2009, fairly recent, just yesterday, and here it is, Spiker, and you're looking for Peter Fleckenstein. The subject matter is the Obamacare broken down for you. God help us. Obamacare broken down for you. God help us on Spiker. So there's 118 reasons to reject this national health care program. 118 reasons why you should reject it. I reject it on several grounds, and one of them is that I practice strict liability. And because I practice strict liability, I don't want to practice limited liability. Limited liability is insurance. I don't want auto insurance, health insurance, fire insurance, homeowners insurance, life insurance. I don't want any insurance at all. Now, about 88% of Americans are in favor of insurance, about 88%, about the same number that are involved in things like alternative health care. So the vast majority of people, 88%, want insurance, are not opposed to insurance, think insurance is great, limited liability is no problem to them. 12% of us don't want insurance for one or more reasons. It may be philosophical, it may be economic. And there are probably people out there don't want it because they've done the arithmetic and said, I don't think this is a good economic program. There's a number of reasons why people don't want insurance and don't practice insurance, not because they're philosophically opposed to it, because of other reasons. And I don't know about Peter Fleckenstein. He may be a guy that doesn't have any problems with insurance in general, just this particular insurance, just this one plan, just this one health care program that he's looked at and said, hey, I'm not sure this is for me. So he wrote four pages here. Spiker picked it up. There's 118 reasons. I'm not going to cover all of them for you. I'm going to cover some that I thought were pretty interesting. But I wanted to preface that by saying that all legislation, and Barack Obama is offering this legislation, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, the Democrats in Congress are sponsoring this. They're behind it. They believe in it. God love them. All legislation is good legislation. There has never been a bad bill enacted in the Congress of the United States from the beginning of our republic to last night at 5 o'clock. Every bill, every law, every custom, every usage, every practice ever enacted was good for somebody. I'm not sure that all these bills, all these laws are good for everybody, but, you know, they're good for somebody. That's why they were proposed in the first place. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913 is hated and despised by conservatives, and it's loved by bankers and big businessmen and government. They think that Federal Reserve note money, paper money, fiat currency is the greatest thing since sliced white bread. More likely it is for them. But the question arises, is it really good for you or is it really good for me? So when I look at this, I say, well, is this something that I want? Is this something that I want to do? Is this something that's good for me? Now, the question arises, should you, just ask yourself this, should you provide insurance for George Gordon? Because I'm one of those 47 million Americans that does not have health insurance. My wife doesn't have it, my son doesn't have it, and we don't want it. Now, you may be sitting there saying, you know, that guy's really nuts. And I probably am, and I wouldn't deny it. But would it be all right with you if I'm a nut who doesn't want health care insurance? Does that harm you in some way? Are you angry with me because this is taking something away from you? Is this taking any bread out of your child's mouth? Because I don't think it is. So whether or not I have insurance or don't have insurance, I don't think that that's bothering you, or it sure as hell shouldn't. I don't think that it's a net expense. I could ask you the question this way. Do you think that you should provide me with this health care insurance against my will, over my objection, at your expense? Because I don't think you should. It's in my best interest to have you buy this health care insurance for me. I got to tell you, my son Dirk, a couple of years ago, about 30, 40 years ago, he was injured in a car wreck. And as a result of that, he had a deteriorating hip, the bone, you know, that goes into the hip socket. It deteriorated, and he needed an artificial hip. And we went into a doctor here in Springfield, and we said, now, what do you think of that? And he said, well, he's going to have an artificial hip if he's going to walk. Otherwise, he's going to be incapacitated and put in a wheelchair, and he'll have to spend the rest of his life as an invalid. But if we had this artificial hip, he could probably lead a fair to middle and normal life. And so we looked at that, and we said, well, okay. How much is that going to cost? And the answer was $30,000. Now, most people at that juncture of time would say, oh my God, $30,000, I only have $30,000, I need health insurance. Well, maybe we should have bought health insurance years ago, but we didn't. We didn't. And so we got to looking at our options, and we discovered that over in India, they do these hip replacement surgeries for $8,000. Now, you got to go to India. But, you know, for a couple, $3,000, you can buy an airline ticket to India. You have to stay there for 6 weeks. And, you know, for $3,000 or $4,000, you can fly to India, rent a room, stay there for 6 weeks or 2 months, pay $8,000 and come back and save $15,000. So we mulled that over. And, in fact, one day we went into the doctor and we said, now, doc, we've got a choice here. We can pay you $30,000 to have this job done, or we can go to India and have this job done. And our vote at this moment in time is to go to India, where it's going to cost us about $15,000, about half what you're proposing to charge us, to have this job done, because we don't have any insurance. And you know what the doc did? He sat down, he sharpened his pencil on both ends, and he said, here's what I'll do. I'll do the surgery for $7,000. You'll have to pay for the anesthesiologist, and you'll have to pay for 3 days in the hospital. So, you know, we got to thinking about that. Now, the hospital now is going to be about $1,000 a day for 3 days. That's $3,000. The anesthesiologist was $1,400. So for $3,000 plus, you know, plus $7,000. So you got $11,500. For $11,500, they did the job for my boy Dirk. Now, we had to pay cash. We had to come up with the money. Fortunately, we were able to break open all of our piggy banks, and we came up with the $11,000. But see, it was just a little cheaper than going to India, which was the competitive factor in the doctor's price. Remember, he said, well, it's $30,000. And I'm sure that if we'd had insurance, we would have gone in. The insurance company would have ponied up the $30,000 or whatever. But, you know, business is business. And so we were very happy with the outcome of the surgery, with the stay in the hospital, with the anesthesiologist. Everybody did a great job. We didn't have any medical malpractice. We're not going to sue anybody. We paid the bill, and we're happy that the thing came out right. And so we're not complaining about the healthcare system here in the United States. And in fact, I had a student down here the other day from Canada, a fellow by the name of Joe. Joe from Canada, Thunder Bay, Canada. And I said, well, now, Joe, you've got national healthcare insurance up there in Canada, don't you? He said, we do. And he says, I've got my national healthcare card here. And I said, how does that healthcare work up there in Canada? He says, well, it works fine. Works fine. He said, if you don't have any need for medical care and you don't have any emergencies, the system works perfectly. But if you have an emergency or if you have any serious health care needs, you jump in your car and you go down to St. Paul, Minnesota and have it done in the States and pay for it. So I said, well, does that then say that the health care insurance program of Canada is really pretty poor? He said, well, that's what I think. And he said, I'm not sure what the other Canadians think, but he said, I think it sucks. And so when I have something I need, I have to go to the States to get it. But, you know, I suppose if you just wanted to go in and have a physical or something and you went into the doctor, you'd probably get that. So I said, okay. Now, that sends me a pretty powerful signal. Now, I'm not here to propose to you people that you vote for this one way or the other. This is a report. I'm going to give you a report here. But as I give you the report, I wanted to tell you that from the people that I've talked to that actually have the health care coverage, now, they tell me that over in Japan, from what I read, the people of Japan are perfectly satisfied with their health care program in Japan. Everybody's happy with it. And God love them, I'm not here to tell the Japanese that they need to give up something that they all love or that we Americans ought not to adopt something that could probably be better than the Japanese model. I just wanted to tell you what Joe from Thunder Bay thought of it, and we're just passing it on to you. And then I just thought I'd tell you of our personal experience. We had a pretty serious, you know, hip replacement. Now, that's kind of heavy-duty major surgery. And we were happy with the marketplace conclusion. And had the doctor said, well, $30,000 or go and suck on eggs, we probably would have jumped on an airplane, gone to India. And I'm just pretty sure we would have done that. Now, there's a number of places around the world that have sent their young people to America to have them trained as doctors, and then they sent them back home to India and Pakistan, other places, and Philippines. And then they build these big, state-of-the-art, modern miracle hospitals. And then they go out into the marketplace and suck Americans and Canadians and Europeans and Japanese and people with money into those hospitals at half price, and they do it for profit. It's the capitalist system. It's the free market system working against us. And we train them. We give them foreign aid, and then they go into business against us and undercut our prices. And that's the breaks that you have to suffer with their doc. You know, now my doctor, this doctor that we're telling you about, he was good enough that he went ahead and competed with the Indians and did a very effective job at doing that, and we didn't have to leave the country. Now, I asked you if you should provide me with health care. Now, I don't think you should. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that would say, yes, it's my duty to provide George Gordon with health care. I want to tell you that I don't want your health care, and I don't want you to force your health care upon me against my will and over my objection, which is what I'm telling you right now. I object to health care insurance. I do not want it. I don't want it if you give it to me free of charge. I still don't want it. If you paid me $12,000 a year to accept it, I would still turn it down. I don't want health care insurance, even if you pay me $1,000 a month to accept it. I don't want it. What is it about no that you people are having such a hard time with? You think I'm crazy and I'm stupid. I've already admitted to you that that's probably true. But so what? I don't want it. Can you understand that? I know it's good for me. I know that you know what's good for me. In fact, you probably know better than I do what's good for me. But I still don't want it. So get out of my life, would you please? Now, that's for all you politicians out there. Now, if you think that you should provide me with health care, I would prefer that you provide me with a car. I think that it is every American's right to have an automobile. And I think that every American should have an automobile. In fact, I think that every American should have at least a Lexus, if not something better. Now, if you want to spend money, I mean, if all of you people out there are just hell-bent for election here and you think that you need to provide health care insurance for every American, which is going to cost about $3,000 per person per year, which is about $900 billion a year. If you take 300 million people, and then you multiply that times $3,000 per person, that turns out to be, now let me see if I'm right here. I'm going to take a, my little Texas Instruments machine here can't handle numbers like that. So let me take 300 million. I did this a minute ago, and I wasn't sure I got the right number. And let's multiply that times 3,000. I think what we do is we come down here with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So that's going to be 8 zeros, okay? Now, I think I'm going to drop 3 zeros down here and put a 9 up front, all right? 3, 3, 3, 3, 6, 9, 12. Is that $9 trillion? I think that's what we're dealing with here, $9 trillion. Now, as I understand it, out of the 300 million Americans, 47 million of them do not have health care insurance. Let's just round that off to 50 million. Well, then 250 million Americans must have health care insurance. So if 250 have it and 50 do not have it, then it looks like about 2, 4, 5, 6. It looks like about one person out of every six doesn't have health care insurance, and about five people out of six do have it. Now, I don't know how many other people out there like me just don't want it. I can't tell you that. I didn't get that number for you, but I'm one that doesn't want it. There may be some people out there that want it but can't afford it. I wanted to tell all of you people out there, I want a Lexus and I can't afford it. So instead of providing me with $3,000 a year for national health care insurance, would you just give me my share in the form of a new Lexus automobile? That way, I'll take care of my own health bills and you take care of my automobile needs. Would that be a fair enough deal? Well, let's try it this way. Let's suppose that you don't think that you should provide me with an automobile. Should you provide me then with housing? I believe that it's every American's right to have a house. Now, I don't know what class of house I should have. You know, some people live in mansions and some people live in squalor. Some of us just kind of live in an ordinary, everyday garden variety house. The average or the median price house in the United States, last time I saw a number, had declined somewhat, but it was around $200,000. Would it be all right, instead of taking health care insurance, if you Americans that just absolutely insist that I should have some kind of government largesse, would you furnish me with a $200,000 house at the rate of $3,000 a year and give me the $3,000 a year to make on my house payments or something? Do you really believe that you owe me a house? Because if you do, I'd be happy to take a house or a car. How about a job? I think it's every American's right to have a job. I don't know how good a job I should have. I don't know if I should have a job that pays me $100,000 a year, guaranteed by government, or if I should have a job that just pays me $20,000 a year, guaranteed by government. But I think every American should have a job. President Obama said so. In fact, President Obama said every American should have a house, every American should have a job. Furthermore, President Obama believes every American should have a pension, whether that's Social Security or you have a pension from your plan or a 401k. I don't have a pension plan. I did not provide for myself with a pension plan. I did not save a dime with my 401k or Krug. I dropped out of Social Security back in 1984. I don't have any Social Security coming in now. I'm 70. I'm old enough to draw Social Security. I paid into it for many years. Then I dropped out of it, sent my card back, rescinded my account, and said, leave me out. I know. All my friends said I was crazy. I said the day would come when I would rue the day that I rescinded my Social Security and dropped out of the program. I did. I don't rue the day. I'm 70 years old. I don't draw Social Security. I don't want it. Didn't want it. Didn't want to pay into it. And I don't want you to either. I don't want you to force the Social Security on me. Fortunately, if you don't apply for Social Security benefits, they will not put you in jail for not receiving, accepting, or signing up for those benefits. That's all right by me. I didn't pay for them. I'm not entitled to them. I don't want them. Didn't want them. Opted out. Now, that being the case, I just thought I would bring that to your attention because I was watching the Lehr News Hour. This was last year during the election, and a young woman from Denver, Colorado, expressed her opinion that America is the richest nation in the world. And it is a shame that 44 million Americans don't have health care insurance. And she said it is every American's right to have health care insurance. I don't know where this girl was educated. I'm sure she went to college. I'm sure she's a lot smarter than I am. Probably has a college degree. I don't believe for a minute that it's my right to have health care insurance, an automobile, a house, or a pension provided for, given to me by you or a combination of you and other people, or any other combination or any other people. I don't believe it for a minute. I not only don't believe it, I don't want it. I don't want you to furnish me a house, a car, a pension, or health care insurance. I don't want you to be saddled with that burden. Now, conversely, I don't want to be saddled with the burden of providing you with health care insurance. I don't know whether you want it or not, and I really don't care, but I don't want to buy it for you. I do not want to work sweat. I do not want beads and drops of sweat falling off my nose on a hot July afternoon while I work to provide something and you come along and take a portion of it to pay for your health care insurance. I don't want you to do that. So there. Now, if we can get past 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 here, should you provide me with health care, an automobile, house, job, or pension? My conclusion is no, and I don't want to provide yours either. Now, I'm not opposed to you having health care insurance, an automobile, a house, a job, and a pension, but if you want it, you buy your own. How's that for a plan? Now, that used to be the American way. It's not anymore, but it used to be. It used to be that our thinking in this country was we want a governmental apparatus that guarantees everybody an equal opportunity to make a choice for himself so that he can go out and work, earn money, and then spend that money on what he thinks he ought to spend it on. Some people will buy health insurance. Some people will buy houses and other people will rent apartments. Some people will work, but some people are lazy and they won't work. Some people will save in their pension programs and some people will not. And they may wake up someday and say, gee, I wished I would have had a pension. I wished I would have worked harder. I wished I would have bought a house. I wished I would have bought a car. I saw the other day the president's program. They have a program here called Cash for Clunkers. They'll pay you $4,500. And if you'll go down, trade your car in, buy a new car. And I didn't do that. I have an old clunker out here. It probably ought to be retired. But I'm not going to do that. I don't believe that you people out there should go out and work in July with sweat dropping off of the end of your nose, providing me with $4,500 to buy a new car. I just can't for the life of me see why you should be saddled with that burden. Because I don't want to be saddled with that burden. I don't want to pay $4,500 to you to buy a new car. And I don't want you to be saddled with that same burden. But I noticed that it's a very popular program, and there was a news clip on the other night. God, there's people. They're just out there just buying these cars as fast as they can buy them. And I said to myself, it's pretty obvious that these people who are buying these new cars can't count. They've all been to public school. None of them can count. And none of them understand the consequences of their actions, not a one. So let me tell you what those consequences are when we come back. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. I'm going to write clunker down here so I don't forget. Clunkers, $4,500. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, and be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67, and that free introductory CD package is on our website, and you can download it right off of our site now. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, before we took our break there, I said cash for clunkers, that the people that are cashing in on this windfall bonanza. And I saw an ad, and it said, hey, this is free. So I want you to write down the word free. And this comes from Uncle Sam. So whoever this Uncle Sam is, I'm going to write that down, Uncle Sam, is giving away $4,500 free. Now, for the rest of you people in the world, Uncle Sam is a euphemism that we Americans use to describe our federal government. This federal government produces nothing. They don't produce any wheat, corn, beans, honey, or oil. They consume a lot. They consume about $3 trillion a year. So the rest of us that do produce wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, they come to us and they take a portion of that, about 40% of it. So when I produce 1,000 pounds of meat, they come and take 400 pounds of meat away from me, and they give it to other people. But they don't produce any meat. I'm a meat producer. I produce milk, butter, eggs, wood. But the government doesn't produce any of those things. What they do is they come and they take it away from me and people like me, the producers, and they give it to other people who either produce less or produce nothing. The government conducts what they call a Robin Hood program. And what they do is they redistribute the income. They redistribute the wealth from the people who produce to the people who either don't produce or produce a lot less. So the government now is taking $4,500 that they don't even have, because this year they're going to spend an extra $2 trillion. So we're borrowing $2 trillion on top of the $3 trillion that we're going to spend as our ordinary everyday garden variety budget. So we're going to borrow a lot of money, including all of these $4,500 bonuses here that we're passing out. So the people that are buying these cars have given their power of attorney to a representative or a senator who is voting their credit. And they're taking their credit and racking up a bill that these people have to pay at some future date. They don't have to pay it now, but they have to pay it at some future date. So they're not getting anything free. They're paying the whole $4,500 plus interest over time. Now let me ask you a question. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, I ask you, are you going to spend $24,000 and buy a new car, $24,000 out of your pocket? Americans at this point in time have been saying, no, we're not going to do that. Now what if I came to you and I said, look, I will loan you $4,500. And you can pay me back my $4,500 at interest. And this will give you the money that you need to go out and buy a new car. Would you do that? Probably no. Now, if I said to you, I'm going to give you $4,500, and you don't have to pay it back. Let me just give it to you. And if you'll take this $4,500 and go out and buy a new car, I'll give you the $4,500. If you don't, then I won't give it to you. Then would you go out and buy a new car? Well, you might. And a lot of people have said, yeah, if I can get the $4,500 free, I'll go out and buy a new car. But you see, you're not getting the $4,500 free. It's being borrowed by your federal government, and you're a taxpayer, and you have to pay that money back. Now, you may be saying to yourself, yeah, but I'll never have to pay it back in my lifetime. That'll be my children or somebody else. Well, then you're a thief, stealing from future generations to consume upon your lusts today. Now, I don't want to do that. I don't want to saddle people in the future with bills that I'm going to run up for them when they're not even here to vote on the process. That's why I'm opposed to it. Now, I'm not going to change this. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here to report to you that the government now in the United States is flat-ass broke. We Americans are all flat-ass broke. We haven't got a pot to piss in, a place to put it, or a window to throw it out of. And we're out here buying new cars and new houses with borrowed money from our government. Do you honest to God believe that that makes sense? Now, there's legislation out there that's already been enacted, and your representatives and your senators have already voted on this, and I mentioned to you, all legislation is good legislation. This $4,500 is wonderful for car dealers. The car dealers are making money. They're happy. Car salesmen are happy. Individuals who are buying these cars are happy. General Motors is happy. The car manufacturers are happy. I don't deny that. But I just thought I would report to you that this money is not free. It's being borrowed. It has to be paid back. It's going to be paid back at interest. And if you don't pay it back, there's going to be confiscation of assets. Confiscation of assets is in the wind here. So I thought I'd pass that one along to you. Now, you might be saying, well, hey, this guy's really drifting far, far away from national health care insurance. No. Our president is over here proposing that we spend about $1 trillion on national health care insurance. First of all, in this program, the number is 8%. So if you want to know how much this is going to cost, the answer is it's going to cost 8% of all the payroll of the United States of America to fund this program. That's what's in the bill. Now, this 8% cost in payroll taxes, which is going to be the minimum cost, it always costs more than you expected. Did you ever notice that? They estimated the cost of the Iraq war at $50 billion. We're at $1 trillion today and counting. That's 20 times more than the Bush administration estimated back in 2003. You can rest assured that this national health care program is going to cost more than the $1 trillion that they're telling you. Now, I took 8% and I multiplied it out, and it's $9 trillion. $9 trillion. So I don't know if anybody ever told you what the cost is going to be, but it looks like to me, you know, I admit I'm not an economist, and I haven't been to college, but I took the average. It costs $3,000 per person in the United States to insure you for 1 year for health care. That's what it costs today, $3,000 per person per year. There's 300 million of us, and that looks like $9 trillion to me. So I just thought I'd report to you that I don't think this thing's going to be free. Now, this 8% is going to be on top of your payroll taxes, which are already 16.67%. It's going to be in addition to the 77 cents a gallon tax that you're going to pay on this cap and trade tax initiative that's already passed. Well, at least it's passed the House. It's a shoe-in in the Senate, because, see, they got 60 votes over in the Senate, and the president's sponsoring this. You can rest assured that's a done deal. This health care insurance is a little bit more up in the air, but if I was a betting man, and I am, I would bet that they're going to enact it. I'm going to tell you, 118 reasons why you probably want to reconsider this as you progress along, but as I said, all legislation is good for somebody. Whether it's good for the majority of people may be another topic. The war in Iraq is a wonderful idea for Kellogg, Brown & Root, and Halliburton, just to name a couple of big corporations. I mean, they've just made nothing but money off the Iraq war. And I'm sure that KBR and Halliburton and a lot of other defense contractors and God knows how many millions of other people have benefited from the Iraq war. Now, I'm not sure that the million Iraqis that died over there in the war, if it benefited them. I'm not sure that it benefited the 27 million Iraqis that lived through it, or the 4,000 or 5,000 Americans that died over there, or their families. There's always a downside to this, you know. But whether it was a good idea or a bad idea, I'm not here to report good and bad ideas. I'm not here to tell you how to vote. Just wanted to give you the facts and figures and the numbers, and then ask you, are you really sure that this is a good idea from you, or for you personally, or from your perspective or point of view? And so I've already told you that from my perspective and my point of view, I never was in favor of that Iraq war. That it never made me a dime. It cost me a bunch. And then I couldn't see that it was of any benefit to the Iraqis, or for the million Iraqis that died, or for any of the Americans that died in the process. That was my view of it. Now, I was outvoted, and of course, everybody said, hey, this is a great idea. We want to go do it. And now that we're about to the end of the program, you'll find that the majority of Americans today think that, well, it wasn't such a good idea after all. So what appeared to be a great idea back in 2003, 6-7 years later, we all wake up one day and we say, well, maybe that wasn't one of our better ideas. So I just thought I'd bring this to your attention today in 2009 on national health care insurance. What appears today to be a wonderful idea may not be nearly as good an idea as you think it is. Now, we wanted political change. Do you remember that last year? And Barack Obama said, I'm going to give you change. And Americans said, by God, that's what we want is change. And it's here. You're getting it. Political change is here. We're going to get 77 cents a gallon added onto our gasoline tax. We are going to have our electric bills double to pay for cap and trade. Now, that's two taxes. Now, I want to remind you that we're in the midst of a depression here. We have a recession that have numbers coming out of it that can only be described in terms of the 1930s now. 1930s numbers are appearing every day. It's true the stock market's gone up 8% in July, but I just got a copy of the International Forecaster, and as I go down page by page, I look at the ups and the downs of all the reports for all of the markets, and it's about 90% bad news, down and getting worse, and about 10% good news, staying the same, decreasing less or going up, about 9 to 1. That does not say to me that this is happy times are here again. Now, I'm not here to tell you what to believe. I just wanted to report to you that the numbers that I see over here aren't good. I'm not going out and buying a new car. I'm not signing up for the president's program. I don't want to sign up and pay for your share of the president's program, and I don't want the change. I'm not happy with the status quo, and I don't want the change either. I just thought I'd point that out. So the payroll tax is 16.66%, and we're going to add 8% to that. Boys and girls, that's going to come right out of your hind end, you know. Now, you might be sitting there unemployed and saying, hey, this is a great idea. Let's tax the rich. The rich don't pay taxes. I've reported that to you now a number of times. Hey, let's tax the corporations. Boys and girls, corporations don't pay taxes. I've reported that to you in the past. It is true they're tax collectors, and they collect tax, and they pass it on to the government. But you can rest assured that Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root are not paying any of the taxes associated with the Iraq War. They never have in the past, they aren't now, and they're not going to in the future. Now, Bill Gates, nice guy that he is, makes a lot of money, and God love him, he's probably entitled to all of it. But Bill Gates is not paying any tax. You can rest assured of that. Now, you can shift this off onto Bill Gates, this 8%. This is what the president's proposing. He says, well, we're going to tax Warren Buffett and Bill Gates. Let me tell you that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are going to pass that tax through. They have tax loopholes. They are going to exercise their tax loopholes and pay nothing. The ultimate end to this is that they will be collecting that tax off of their corporate profits that they will then have to raise prices for. You're going to pass this tax on to ExxonMobil. All ExxonMobil is going to do is raise the price of gasoline. Nothing more, nothing less. Government's going to collect the 77 cents a gallon, rest assured. ExxonMobil is going to collect the 77 cents a gallon from you and pass it on to the government. ExxonMobil isn't going to pay 1 cent out of that 77 cents a gallon to support this cap and trade program that's being initiated by government to protect you from carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which is as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note, because the volcano that erupts this year is going to put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than all of the human activities from the Garden of Eden until last night at 5 o'clock. And that's every volcano. That's just one volcano with a massive eruption. So it's a phony idea to try to take carbon dioxide out of the air. I reported on that to you before, that removing carbon dioxide from the air is the equivalent of a flea crawling up an elephant's leg with rape on his mind. It's just futile. But don't let me get in your way. If that's what you've got in mind, get after it. Now, we need to ask, what is it that government is trying to do with this national health care program? As near as I can figure, they're trying to provide quality health care to every American. I don't know what quality health care is. I've never seen anybody explain that. Now, does that mean that every American should have a hip replacement surgery paid for by somebody else? If that's what you're after, the somebody else wants his hip replacement surgery provided by somebody else. So in the final analysis, I'm going to buy your hip replacement surgery and you're going to buy mine. And you and I together have to pay taxes to do that. And we have to pay for the administrative costs of the people who are going to collect these taxes and then pay them out to the appropriate people. So when we pay in $3,000, we're going to have to pay in a little bit more so that we can pay for those administrative overhead costs, aren't we? Or we're not going to get $3,000 worth of services back. Maybe we're only going to get $2,500. But one way or the other, if you're going to buy mine and I'm going to buy yours, why don't you and I just agree? You just pay for your own and I'll pay for mine, and then we don't need this expensive bureaucracy, which means that everybody then will simply buy his own. If you want a Lexus, go buy one. I don't want one, or I can't afford one, or I don't think that's where I want to spend my money, so I'll spend my money on something else. And that's what we used to do in this country until somebody came along and said, we need a change here. And the president said, if not now, when? If not now, when? My answer to that, Mr. President, is never. Never. I don't want health care insurance. I don't want to support it. I don't want to pay for it. I don't believe that it's a proper role for government. I don't think it's got any business in the health care business. And if people want health care, they should go out and buy it. And if they don't want it, they should be free to choose for themselves what the hell they want to buy. Now, I'd like to point out that not everybody in the world owns a Rolls Royce. There are fat cat people. There are wealthy people out there who do own Rolls Royces. And God love them. Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, if you have a Rolls Royce, a Lamborghini, or a Lexus or two, I think you're entitled to them. You probably ought to have two more. I don't have enough money for one. If I did, I probably wouldn't buy one. I think that it's a waste. I don't want one. I don't want you to buy me one. I'm not opposed to you buying a Lamborghini for yourself, but I just can't for the life of me see spending my money, my time, effort, and energy on that kind of a car. Although other people do. Now, if I'm entitled to an automobile, why not a Lamborghini? See my point? So if we get down here to the final equation, it is everybody in the final analysis has to provide for himself. Now somebody's going to say, yeah, but not everybody can provide for themselves. See, not everybody has the money. Now, I saw a charity the other night. It's called Smile. I'm going to promote this Smile. There are children born with cleft palates and hair-lipped. And they really look gross. And they look bad. It's a terrible birth defect. But it can be fixed. And here's the bright spot. It can be fixed for $240. And there are doctors that belong to this organization called Smile. And when I saw it, it was on CBS last night. And when I saw that, I said, Dirk, write down that phone number. Because the doctors are donating their time. And they're going around the world. They happen to be down in South America. And they said, for $240 for the cost of the materials, we doctors will take those materials and we will fix these cleft palates. Will you donate $240? And I saw that and I said, yes. Yes, I will donate $240 to cure a child of cleft palate. And if it's true that the doctor is donating his time, and if it's true that they need the $240 to pay for the surgical thread and the needles and the air transportation to get them down there to do the job, by God, I think I want to pay $240 to do that. I think that's a good place to put that. So I just pass that on to you. If I see somebody that's in need, I want to choose for myself. I want to be the guy that decides how my money, how my wealth, how my labor is going to be disposed of. I want to be the guy that does that. Is that too much to ask? All right, Mr. President, we'll be back with more on this. Remember, this is from Spiker, Obamacare. It was published, my date on this is 7:30:09. Hey, let me give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in 120 countries plus daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.